Gata Nubinga Sutra. The Dharma incomparably profound and infinitely subtle is rarely encountered, even in millions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
Good morning. As the world-honored one was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, "This spot is good to build a sanctuary." Indra, emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, "The sanctuary is built." The world-honored one smiled. A sanctuary can be defined as a sacred or holy place. Approximately 12 years ago, I was searching on the web looking for a place to sit in Maine when I came across the website for a sangha with two teachers in the White Plum lineage who had come to Maine from New York State. Since my previous practice had been at Zen Mountain Monastery in New York with Daido Roshi, who was part of this same lineage, I was very surprised and pleased at this discovery. It seemed remarkable to me that two White Plum teachers had come here to the wilds of Maine. I had been struggling with Zen for a number of years. The inflexible rules that ZMM followed had been a problem for Linda's and my practice when our son was an infant. In addition, when I had returned to graduate school to become a therapist, I had made a deliberate effort to move away from the macho persona that had developed over my years as a martial arts master. I wanted to have a gentler demeanor, but the Zen I was practicing there still had a very military, hierarchical male tenor. People shouted if someone moved. Expressions of emotions were rare and very subdued when they appeared. And great value was placed on long hours of arduous exertion in the Zendo. There was also a lot of attention given to status within the Sangha. I just couldn't be comfortable there any longer. So we had given up practicing there shortly before we moved from Vermont to Arizona. Unfortunately, because my practice at ZMM was my primary experience of Zen, I believed that there was no longer a place for me in Zen. I was caught in a love-hate conundrum. I didn't feel that I could return to Zen, but yet I missed it terribly. I frequently had dreams that I was back there attending a sesshin. I spent a number of years wandering around seeking a new spiritual home without any success, and then I happened upon Treetop. At that time, Treetop was right in Margaret and Steph's home. A week earlier, they had moved to Orono from Brewer, which had been their first stop here. That was actually where the Zendo amidst the treetops had been. Prior to that, in New York, their center was called the Dragon Cliff Zendo. In Orono, we sat right in a small sunroom that could only be reached by walking through their bedroom. There were three students practicing at that time: Mike, Jamie, not this Jamie, a male Jamie, and truck driver Bob. The first time I went into Daisan and presented a koan to Steph, I shouted my answer the way I might have at ZMM. Steph told me to cut out the crapola. He said that Treetop didn't have any macho Zen. Sitting in that sunroom was intimate and relaxed. I don't think we were doing services at that time. We just sat together, went to Daisan, and talked for a while after. There was absolutely no pretense and no pomp and circumstance. I only had to go there and sit a couple of times before I realized that this gentle form of Zen was exactly what I had been looking for. I had found a spiritual home, a sanctuary. A lot has happened since then. The two-car garage in Orono was transformed into a wonderful little zendo. Many people came and went over the years. Peter Harris and Deborah showed up and have never left. We've had many powerful, yet warm, intimate, and simple retreats, sleeping on couches and floors, cooking in Margaret's kitchen, and brewing espresso with Steph's prized Swiss coffee maker. With Steph, there were always surprises. We had everything from TV crews to a flock of bird watchers who were in town for a convention come to visit us during Sesshin. We even had a black bear appear, but I don't think that Steph planned that. His mercurial nature meant that we could never predict what new ideas and experiences we might encounter next. Then there was a major change. Steph was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, a progressive, untreatable, and always fatal disease. In the face of an uncertain future, Steph and Margaret decided to move south to the Waterville area and eventually found this site for the third major incarnation of Treetop. We had a very few special years with Steph before his passing, and I think those of us who experienced that time will always be deeply moved by the tremendous dignity with which he bore that suffering. He revealed the Dharma with every step and every breath as he made the arduous ascent into the Zendo twice each week, a journey that Peter Harris compared to someone climbing Mount Everest. Those were the things that made Treetop what it was, the teachers, the teachings, and the wonderful group of students, the three treasures of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The bricks and mortar changed several times, from the treetops of Brewer to the sunroom to a garage to a living room and to a converted mother-in-law apartment. But three treasures were the thing that illuminated them all, that made each one a sanctuary. In Zen, a sanctuary is not a place. It is how a place is transformed by the presence of the three treasures. In those terms, any place can be a sanctuary. Is that what Indra is pointing to as he plants that blade of grass? If we sat among the fragrant grasses in a sunlit meadow, with butterflies dancing among us and birds singing in the nearby trees, would that be any less a sanctuary than the most resplendent Zen hall? Perhaps you may feel as I do, that the meadow is indeed a sanctuary that is beyond comparison to any Zendo. Furthermore, that meadow has no boundaries. All space and time are contained right there. Nothing is excluded. And by our sitting there, we would bring the three treasures, and that ground would be consecrated. Of course, that connection to the whole universe is no less true of a formal Zendo. It is just less apparent. Look around you at the other persons who are here with you today. Shakyamuni Buddha, Bodhidharma, Huineng, Chaocho, Dogen Zenji, Maizumi Roshi, and Steph Bargato are all manifesting here, all present in this sanctuary. That is in part why we recite the identity of relative and absolute in our services, to reveal our intimate connection to a lineage that stretches for 2,500 years. It is not a list of dead persons. It is a reminder that each of them lives right here, right now, reflected in our practice, just as every blade of grass and even the most distant stars are part of our Sangha. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. It is the synergy of those three elements that makes our practice, our way, possible. Without anyone, we would not have Zen. In each moment that we practice together, let's continuously believe, bring those to life, for they are treetop. Then our vow, creations are numberless, I vow to free them, will be fulfilled. As the world-honored one was walking with the congregation, he pointed to the ground with his finger and said, "This spot is good to build a sanctuary." Indra, emperor of the gods, took a blade of grass, stuck it in the ground, and said, "The sanctuary is built." The world-honored one smiled. So if anyone would like to share any thoughts or reflections, please.
I think I felt I had my first Zen experience when I was probably somewhere between 9, 10, or 11. And I was in a grassy meadow. For the first time in my life, I felt this immense expansiveness. And that memory has always been my sanctuary.
You mentioned there's always something new with stuff. There's the sanctuary and then there's the surprise, and they both go together. So Steph would embark on one initiative, and then when he got tired of that, he something would happen, something would bubble up from him, in him during his meditations, and we would come just before sitting, and we would get the latest, and sometimes we would think to ourselves, man, this is a zigzagging ship. And in retrospect, however, whether it was changing all the time or not, Steph was living it so that, you know, he had these elaborate daily meditations, and then he was studying the sutras or working on various Zen projects, writing Dharma talks, so that it was always happening. So in the Zendo, it was in our group, one person was basically always gestating, and that was what was more significant than whatever happened in terms of his, you know, what the next interesting thing to do was. And he would, you know, he would say, "Okay, well, let's read J.D. Salinger," and I thought, "Wow. That's for J.D. Salinger," because J.D. Salinger was a Zen practitioner, and he read the famous book Nine Stories as a Zen thing. Well, we never got around to that, but then I went and read the Nine Stories, you know, again, in the light of that. So there were things that he would mention that were of great interest, and some of them we incarnated, and some of them we did not, but it was all Sangha building, Dharma expression.
Yeah, Liz Borgata mentioned in the last week or so that when they were with Bernie, that one of the things that Bernie did was every time somebody got comfortable at their job in the Zendo and said they liked it, he immediately changed it and made it so that they had to do something different. That, I mean, that was part of how he kept people fluid and not clinging. And so I think about, you know, that way that stuff was, I think I did that as, for all of us. You know what I mean? It was kind of like, okay, we got a plan, we're going to do this. And then we'd come in the next week and he'd say, "No, nah, we're going to do this over here," you know. It was never, you know, as soon as you got clinging to something, it changed. It was different, you know.
I just know that over these last few months, I've been so grateful for the gift of Sangha. You know, it's just meant so much to me to have Treetop back again, you know, and never have it in the first place. I mean, I went once to the Zendo in Orono, and it just sort of felt too far away, and so, you know, was thrilled when they moved down here a little closer, and, you know, I've had conversations with Todd about this, and that I don't think I'm being hyperbolic in the least when I say that this practice has saved my life. I mean, I just, you know, it saves my life every day. But I don't think that I could practice somewhere that was, you know, so militaristic and inflexible. You know, I went to Zen Mountain Monastery once, and although there were many admirable things about it, and I took a lot away from that weekend that I spent there, and I think it instilled in me some seriousness about really wanting to do this practice. I just don't think I could have survived in a practice place like that without sort of that sense of intimacy with a close-knit community, and without permission to pick it up at my own pace, because, you know, sitting was very physically painful at first, I think, you know, as probably some of the rest of you have experienced, and so, you know, 35 minutes without moving, and, you know, that just wasn't going to happen for me, and so it was nice to find somewhere that held the traditions and took them seriously, but held them loosely and understood that that this practice isn't about putting on a show of, you know, how serious we are and how still we can sit, but that it's about relieving suffering, you know. Just like that poem by Ikkyu that I read the other day. Don't wait for the man in the snow to cut off his arm. Help him now. And I think, to me, that is so much what Treetop is about, you know. Treetop doesn't ask you to cut off your arm and you know, show that you're serious and macho. It's just, you know, it's about helping us now, where we are.
Yeah, I think we just want to be careful, because both I and you have talked about Zen Mountain. I mean, it's not, I don't, you know, there are many places like that. There are probably more places like that than like this, you know. I think it's not so much speaking negatively towards Zen Mountain as it is simply that for many of us that style of Zen doesn't work,
and for some people it does, and that's
absolutely
that's fine too.
I'm very embarrassed to say that part of the reason that it took me so long to get here 2 weeks ago was because I thought things might be too formalistic, and I've always had trouble with that. I fell in love with Zen through Alan Watts, and I wasn't sure, and I kept waiting and waiting, and then decided I wanted to come and check it out here. Mm. So glad that I did.
So are we. Yeah. Welcome.
Yeah, it's funny, that whole issue. You know, there are people who've come here and left because it's too formal, and there's people who've come here and left because it's not formal enough. It's like, you know, it's interesting. What, you know, yeah. it's a hard thing, and there is no right answer.
I definitely think Steph set the tone for Treetop. His bear hugs.
He still sets the tone. I think he still sets the tone.
Yeah, I know, I believe that.
Along with others, of course.
Yeah. But I think that expansiveness and generosity lives on.
Well, tree chop is too formal for me, but I'm here anyway. I have to endure because there's other benefits that I can't seem to manage without.
I had a very anti-formal bias, really anti-formal bias. So it's been surprising to me that I've been able to cope with it. And after 4 years of doing the service, now I only screw up maybe every third or fourth time. So that was an indication of why I didn't like formal things, because of the way they make me feel incompetent. I remember crying. I was doing the bells, which is really a difficult thing to get straight. I just never was getting it right. And I was crying in Daisan. Not so much because I was screwing up, but because of a little boy in me,
yeah,
who was still suffering from not being good at such things. And I was, and then I like, and I've embraced my incompetence now.
And we've embraced it too.
We're perfectly incompetent.
That's what Dokela said. It was my idea.
No, but I think that's true, Peter. I think, I remember when I first came here, the lightness with which you seemed to be able to hold the fact that, like, oh, screwed up the service again, whatever, was really inspirational to me. I thought, wow, there's a guy right there. And whether that was true or not, of how you really were holding it, it's how it looked to me on the surface. It was like, wow, he's really just...
It was it's the superego, telling you what you want to be. Yeah, and beating yourself up on it. It doesn't stop for me. It's quiet down.
One of my particular Zen sicknesses is that I feel the need to type about it way too much on the internet with other people that type about it way too much on the internet, and I don't think most of them practice that much. And a lot of people express that sort of dislike for formalism. I think it's, I think it's a uniquely American kind of thing, possibly. And, what I often say is that, because a lot of people say, well, isn't holding on to all of this ritual and tradition just another form of clinging? And I say, well, sure, but I think that probably our bigger American form of clinging is clinging to our dislike for any kind of ritual, any kind of anybody telling us what to do or how to do something. And so on one hand, I felt very comfortable coming here and feeling permission to screw up and to not be able to sit a full 20 minutes without wiggling or whatever. But on the other hand, I think that just that it gives us space to, or a container, rather, to deal with that shit that we're all carrying around from when we were little kids, and,
I feel this is a beautiful mix of formal and informal here. And I think me coming in before we had as much formal as we do now made it easier for me to embrace the formal now, because I did have a real bias about anything that referred to any kind of higher power or something out there. It's like, get me the out of here type of thing. And I enjoy the formal now. I enjoy the ritual, the services where at first they were uncomfortable, and now there are a there's a richness to them for me. And I look forward to learning more about the various sutras and understanding them more.
One of my classes is the students are going into elementary school to teach poetry. So they have to, in their lesson plans, they have to come up with prompts. And the prompt that says, that ends them up with, well, write anything you'd like, doesn't work. And they found that the more structured the response, the more creative, the prompt, the more creative the kids are. So, and that is a big revelation for every single one of them, because you think you don't want this. This is going to stifle, and then they find that it just leverages incredibly unexpected things out of kids.
Is it like mentioning a detail or a subject or something?
Well, sometimes you give very simple versions of "I used to be, but now I am." Yeah, so you fill in the blanks. Mm. And so that puts you in a completely different way than if you had to write about how has your life changed, you know. You would never, no kid could write about that.
Yeah. Well, no. It's like starting a conversation with a kid. You don't say, well, what kind of day did you have today? You say, who was sitting next to you at lunch? Or what did you have for lunch? Or, you know, something really concrete. And that's also one of the revelations of Zen, is the concrete and being with that and not setting it aside. Like if you go to this gorgeous Episcopal church and enjoy the beauty, visual and oral, somehow you leave that behind when you leave the church. And with Zen, I think we're learning how to carry it with us all the time.
Something else I thought of listening to the talk came to mind. I remember my dad, who was born in Skowhegan, lived his whole life in Skowhegan, died in Skowhegan, never wanted to be anywhere else but Skowhegan, but he always said that wherever he was home. And he spent a lot of time away from Skowhegan, but it's almost a contradiction, but it somehow makes sense.
Yeah, we never know what's right or not, you know. I mean, if somebody from Japan probably walked into this and saw what we were doing, they'd go, that's crap, that's not Zen, you know. What are you people doing? You know, you're sloppy, you're disorderly, you're, you know, whatever. You know, we're not sitting here in robes.
Yeah, you're not wearing robes.
And, you know, and we're, you know, on and on, you know. We are every morning we give Soto Zen 10,000 insults, you know, and yet it's what somebody mentioned, Jamie something. I mean, this is, you know, we're trying to find an accommodation between our sensibilities as Americans, as people who've grown up in this culture, and yet to preserve some flavor of the tradition. I mean, I think, you know, sort of like Tebbia, tradition, you know. It's got a value. It's got, you know, and it connects us. You know, we look at the sort of the significance of ritual in every culture, in every religion. You know, what does it do? In some ways it connects us. In some ways it changes our consciousness, you know. And in some ways it gives us a mirror. Several of you talked about that sort of mirror effect. You know, what's going on with me? Why am I resisting this? Why am I whatever, you know? So we're learning about ourselves in the process. We're learning to let go of whatever that thing is that obstructs us from being fully present with it. So it's powerful. But I have no idea. And Steph had no idea, right? I mean, who was talking to Jerry? We were talking about the other day about how he came back one day and said, we're going to get rid of the sticks, right? I mean, we never got rid of the sticks, but he had that idea because somebody was upset by the sticks. You know, I mean, who knows what's right, you know, right or wrong? I mean, there may be people who have left here because the teachers have sticks. You know, you know, maybe we shouldn't, but you know, but we do. You know, it's just trying to kind of find the a place that works for us. I guess that's really, you know, in the end, it's not right or wrong. It's just what works for us. And that's, some people are going to come and like it, and some people are going to come and not like it, and we can't. Oh well, you know. We aren't going to please everybody. If we did, I could be as powerful as the Pope, but... gold Roxu. Okay, moving right along.
Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it.